I could say that safely we are ready to go. Mnumzana, Mbaba, Mr. Dumezweni.
Hello, sir.
Yes. How is the outlook for us to start?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to everyone present. Right now, Chair, we are having four committee members with an apology, with one apology from Honorable Singh that we have received as a committee. So as far as I'm checking here, I can confirm that we've got four members that are on this platform with the hope that others are going to join soon, because the program, including the notice, has been sent to all members of the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm sure we are within a minute or so would be fine. Just spoken with the Honorable Matafa. He has been off for a while.
But recording in progress.
Today's okay. He is going to join us. The summer is heavy on him, but listening to him is a somewhat recovered, shows he's going to connect with us. Nevertheless, I think based on time, let's allow those who are present not to be denied their punctuality as part of the meeting. We are a meeting as a committee for the second time, but the first time with the Office of the Auditor General in the year. So it's of relevance to when I greet them to as well indicate that the year has since started for us, hopefully for them, looking into their own program and the matters on the table of the Office of the Auditor General and the outlook of matters range from finalization of the handling audits, the actual engagements of various auditees, but what most matters are the responses that come from the auditees from time to time in as far as observing the Auditor General's findings in their reports from time to time. That has been the concern. The committee, when we have seen how the office sought to entrust and instill a modeled approach of accountability for the accounting officers and as well to the executives in various institutions. So our concern has been mainly on a pile of non-responsive attempts from those areas that have been raised on the previous audits. The case in point is with municipalities, the area which somewhat worries everybody, including the president, as we have heard yesterday, the State of the Nation address, where the emphasis was on working hard to make local government work as our part. That's why today we have this kind of a meeting, which is going to have clear indicators as to whether there's observation of such follow through on the assertions of the Office of the Auditor General on the audits of various municipalities. So welcome, colleagues, and the compliments of the new season, which is somewhat approaching the end of the quarter. The matters in front of us is only one matter, which is the briefing by the Auditor General on local government councils who do not find it necessary to create some sense of hope that they are following the Auditor General's reports and act on them. So welcome AG and your team, and we welcome your colleagues and everyone who is part of the meeting, including media. Good morning. Apologies were heard, and therefore we're going to give over to the AG to pull through her presentation. Over to AG.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to you and to the honourable members. Ooh, I just realised my camera is a bit funny. I'm going to switch it off while I work on it. Thank you for the opportunity to brief yourself on this topic, and thank you for the opportunity to reflect with you on the impact that we're making in the implementation of our powers, especially in the local government sphere, and importantly to give you a sense of what sits behind the statistics of the numbers we often share with you when we talk about unresponsiveness in some instances. As you recall, when we tabled the MFMA MI report with you at the end of last year, we did share some insight on how we are doing in implementing those powers. So my presentation today will start off with just a recap of what's in that report that we tabled, and then I'll share some examples on areas where we are seeing a lack of responsiveness, as you've indicated. We always like to start our presentations with a reminder that our job is to audit, report, and to apply our enforcement powers, really to support the processes of oversight, to support improvements in accountability and in consequence management within the state. Crucial that we get consequence management right, as you indicated, Honourable Chair, when you started, because that's a key pillar to improving governance, to improving the performance of public institutions and the strength of those institutions, so that trust can start to be built between public institutions and the people that they serve. Our accountability ecosystem is very well known to yourself. This report will really be giving you a sense of how, in the implementation of our powers, in the processing of identified material irregularities, different leaders have dealt with these MIs in accordance with their authority and responsibilities and obligations. We'll also give you a sense of where we believe there needs to be more investment in sharpening how different players actually contend with their own responsibilities. Because as you well appreciate, if we are to get accountability, transparency, performance rights, we have to get every single one of these players doing their part and doing so more effectively and more consistently. So we'll talk to you about what we're seeing accounting officers do or not, what we're seeing the executive authorities and municipalities doing, and then what we believe needs to happen in the provincial leadership within the different provinces where MIs have been identified in the local government sphere, which I think will give you a sense of how what we're experiencing. I think we can move on to the next slide. Just a quick reminder that the MI process and definition is set out in the amendment to the Public Audit Act, as well as the regulations that support how we are implementing these powers. And those regulations were gazetted after consultation with GOEC as was required. We're dealing with MIs that we identify during the course of an audit, be it a non-compliance or a contravention of legislation, an instance of fraud or theft, or even a breach of fiduciary duty, which we identify when we do our regularity audit. And as you know, our regularity audit covers three areas: financial statements, performance information, as well as compliance. If we identify a non-compliance or a contravention through this audit, that when we assess, come to the view that it results in a material financial loss, or is likely to do so, then we raise an MI. or if such non-compliance results in a misuse of a public resource, a loss of a public resource, or harm to the public institution and harm to the general public. So then what we do is we notify the accounting officer that we've identified an MI. We give them an opportunity to respond. When we get that response, our job is to assess whether or not that response is adequate. And if we believe that that response is adequate and appropriate in the circumstances, then we allow them to continue to implement their stated actions. And then we continue to track how they are doing up until they resolve the MI. An MI is resolved once there have been a few things done by the accounting officer as given in the law. It's really in accordance with their given responsibilities. In terms of the right-hand side of this diagram, we're dealing with where we're not seeing appropriate action, where we give the notification and the accounting officer either does not respond or their response in our assessment is not adequate or appropriate in the circumstances. We will then invoke our powers. And our powers begin with us being able to refer a matter to a public body for further investigation if the accounting officer has failed to do so. Issuing a recommendation in the audit report if the accounting officer is still not acting. And after some period of monitoring their action, we then will issue binding remedial action. We'll take binding remedial action. And that's more a much stronger sense of what we compel them to do. And that action is reviewable only in a court of law. And then if that fails, then we get to a point where we are in the process of issuing a certificate of debt. In some instances, we do have a combination of such instances where perhaps the matter needs to be referred to a public body, but there are specific recommendations we can issue at a particular point in time, and then we do that, and we run that those two processes parallel to each other. I think let's move on to the next slide. The legal obligations of every accounting officer in the municipal space are set out in the MFMA and their regulations. And specifically, every single accounting officer in a municipality or in a municipal entity is required to ensure that where there is a non-compliance identified, they have to perform an investigation, confirm what the facts are, get enough information to assess who done what, and then hold them accountable. They're supposed to prevent further losses or recover any losses that have already been incurred, and I beg your pardon, and recover any losses that have already been incurred. And they're required to ensure that where there are indications of corrupt or criminal conduct, then they've got to refer those matters to law enforcement agencies for further action. If accounting officers do these things, when there are audit findings, even before they become MIs, we will then get to a point where there is protection of resources, then where there is ongoing corrective action so that there's systems and processes and disciplines within that institution improve, and where the culture within that institution improves if accounting officers habitually apply consequence management. Most municipalities have got in place their own policies and procedures that support these obligations. Unfortunately, in too many instances, those policies go unimplemented. These steps, if taken, would first of all avoid MIs, but importantly, they would help to get MIs attended to in a way that's supportive of resource protection, of institution building, of culture shift within those institutions. I think let's go to the next slide. Since we started this process of implementing MIs 4 years ago, we started with just 9 auditees, and I think it's always good to reflect on just how far we've come. In the 4 MFMA cycles since then, we have ramped up our efforts to implement the new power at a total of 170 auditees. So 170 municipalities are being audited as at 2022 on the basis of the MI process. We have expanded that number for the 2023 financial year, which we are now wrapping up. That report for MFMA will be tabled in Parliament towards the end of May, as has been the norm over the years. the analysis of the audits that have been concluded, the final completion of audits where they may have been delayed for some reason or other, all of that work is happening in the machinery in the normal process. And then we'll capture the MIs that we've identified in the 2023 audit and report on those when we do the general report at the end of May. Every single year when we report on these MIs, we do keep tracking the old ones, and we give you a sense of what are the new ones that we've identified and how are we tracking on the old ones. So far in the local government space, we've identified a total of 268 material irregularities. We've identified that of those, 194 relate to transactions where there are instances of material financial loss. And we've consolidated that number to come at a 5.2 billion rand of loss that we have calculated associated with the MIs we've identified. And as you know, when we audit, we only cover a sample that is scientifically determined. So we don't cover the full population of transactions. And also, not every single transaction will show up as an MI. So it doesn't mean that 5.2 billion rand is all that has been lost through non-compliance, fraud or theft, or breaches of fiduciary duties. It just tells you the type of items that we've identified through the application of these powers. The type of issues that are leading to financial loss relates to matters that we often identify in the course of our normal audits, even before the MI process came into being, where we're seeing that there's payments for goods and services that are not being received, unfair, uncompetitive, and uneconomical procurement practices, ineffective use of consultants, specifically in the financial reporting space. As you know, when we audit, we've been raising this matter of the over-reliance on financial reporting consultants, even though people are employed in the finance divisions of municipalities, and we determined that in far too many instances, there was payment to consultants, and it was reflecting ineffective use of consultants for using them for the very basics, not complex matters, because the issue is not so much about the principle of using consultants for to supplement capacity that exists within a municipality. Naturally, there are some matters that are complex and need specific expertise, which can be outsourced. Here we're dealing with the ineffective use of consultants that come in to do the very basics that have simply been neglected by those that are appointed to run public affairs during the course of the year. And also, where we find that consultants are appointed, but their impact is limited. And mainly because when you have neglected the basics during the course of the year, to get someone to come and compile financial records and financial statements at the end of the year is not always going to work, because you've missed out on those daily, monthly, quarterly disciplines that make for good financial management. We've also raised matters relating to inefficient spend of public resources where value for money is not being received. And yet when we have identified some non-compliances, but also when we're able to see on the ground that projects are not there and there have been payments to contractors or suppliers, then we then identify that value for money has not been received. We're also seeing too many instances of revenue not being billed or received, and particularly in municipalities that are already under severe cash flow constraints. And those cash flow constraints then often lead to late or non-payments to creditors who then charge interest and penalties. And sometimes that interest and penalty isn't purely because of cash flow constraints, but poor cash flow management, where even where payment arrangements are entered into between the ODT and the water board or a creditor such as Eskom, then they then don't honor those established payment arrangements, and then they still incur interest and penalties. In our assessment, this is not about penalizing municipalities that have got financial viability problems, but this is about making sure that we hold accounting officers and CFOs responsible for managing the resources that they do have in their hands more effectively. And then we've also identified instances of asset investment losses, A key example here would be investments made in the VBS that were ultimately lost in the VBS mutual bank. Out of the 5.2 billion rand I talked about as the estimated financial loss, 1.6 billion rand related to VBS transactions. Some of the transactions that we then identified as material irregularities relate to matters where we can't identify a material financial loss, but we can see substantial harm to the general public. Through the course of our audits, one of the things we've been raising as being particularly problematic is the instances of repeated disclaimers. And so we raised material irregularities because we took the view that here, there was harm being caused to public sector institutions when you fail to maintain proper records and fail to report properly on how you've dealt with public funds. We also saw the MIs we raised on non-submission of financial statements having that type of impact where there were improvements in submission of financial statements. Because again, we took the view that there may not be a direct financial loss we can identify, but surely you are harming a public institution. Another MI, where we dealt with loss, harm to the general public, relates to matters on the non-management or poor management of wastewater treatment plants, which then led to the pollution of water resources, which harms the environment and also causes harm to the general public. We also dealt with MIs relating to poor management of landfill sites. So the ones on the right-hand side, you're not going to be able to relate to the 5.2 billion rand of estimated financial loss, but they are just as important in our view. They give full expression to what the definition of an MI ought to be and what we understand, as AJ said, was the intention behind this instrument given to the office. And we are using it to then drive behavior changes, to drive improvements in the governance arrangements within local government. For example, some of the disclaimers have improved. Some of the financials that were standing for long periods of time have now come through. And we've also been able to refer matters on harm to wastewater treatment plants to other relevant government departments so that there can be an ecosystem that worries about all of these things until they get corrected. Let's move on to the next slide. What we're finding is that, as we reported, is that most accounting officers do respond. We found that there were at least out of the 268, we found that there were 57 instances where the MI was resolved. And MIs are resolved once there has been a process of recovery and the accounting officer has gone as far as possible to try and recover funds that are being lost. Where there have been instances where consequence management has actually been implemented and where there's been strengthening of internal control so that there's no further losses on or harm caused. As a consequence of the work we've done, we've seen that over half a billion rand has been safeguarded in public resources as part of the impact where accounting officers do respond. And there are strengthening financial internal controls, as I indicated, and there are reporting matters to law enforcement. In 95 instances, there's appropriate action being taken, and 61 instances, which is where I'll go for detailed engagement just now, that's where we're finding that there isn't appropriate action. In 31 instances, we did receive response to our MI notification. However, at the time that we tabled this report, we were still in the process of assessing the appropriateness of the proposed action. I have to also indicate that whilst we are busy assessing the appropriateness of that action, the accounting officers do continue with implementing it. And then in some of the instances we had recently notified as the audit cycle ended and we had not yet received a response from those accounting officers in terms of how they are doing in implementing or how they intend to correct that material irregularity. I think it's just one thing to highlight that some of the instances where we're finding accounting officers acting, it can be as simple as an accounting officer submitting financial statements that were that were outstanding. And we've seen that happen in a number of instances. It can be matters where they go and recover funds that were being overpaid, as we saw in the OR Tambo district municipality that had overpaid an implementing agent. Following our MI process, they went ahead and corrected that and got the money back and ultimately put in place disciplinary action to deal with the matter, which is what we want to see. More than that, we also would like to encourage accounting officers not to deal only with material irregularity notifications, but to really be seen with strengthening control so that they prevent these problems going into the future. The next slide deals with the nature of the MIs, but I do think we've dealt with that as I spoke, and also there are this slide you would have seen before. I just want to highlight that on the bottom left-hand side, you see that there were 49 MIs related to interest paid, especially to Eskom, water boards, and other suppliers, which in our assessment could have been avoided had there been better financial management practices and discipline. We also saw that non-compliance with tax legislation was also leading to penalties and interest being charged by SARS and ultimately having to be paid. Here the story is on two levels. There's one about financial viability of those municipalities, which do need to be dealt with. But there's also a secondary one, which is crucial, which is about making sure that municipalities do manage the cash flows that they have on hand much better, that they do honor the payment arrangements between themselves and their creditors so that they avoid these instances of avoidable interest and penalties. They really can ill afford this level of loss because of poor financial management disciplines. And if you see there around the 22 instances where revenue was not being billed, even though it's difficult to collect revenue in a number of instances across many municipalities, especially as households get poorer and the ability to pay for services diminishes, if revenue is not even being billed correctly, the problem gets even worse. So we've raised these MIs as a critical part of contributing to getting municipalities to improve their own financial management discipline to at least bill correctly, and then have the struggle to collect, especially where people are unable to collect, and also where people don't have the culture of paying for services. Crucial that at least we start off by billing correctly and optimizing the type of revenues that can reach the coffers of a municipality. And then of course you see that the bulk of our MIs deal with the procurement and payment systems. Okay, so the matter that we wanted to delve in a bit deeper today is on the next slide, which is where our accounting officer have not responded. What we've seen is that in those 51 instances where there hasn't been enough action by accounting officers, we've listed for you the specific municipalities where that is happening, and you can see the provinces where there's a particular prevalence of non-responsiveness. Because of the design of the public finance management systems in our country, which puts the primary responsibility for financial management and performance management in the hands of the accounting officer, which gives them also obligations on how they're supposed to implement corrective action, the PAA does not replace the accounting officer. Ours is to act in a way that's supportive of improvements in consequence management. So we do have to give them opportunity to take action. It's only when they fail to do so that we can invoke our powers. And our powers, as put in the legislation and the relevant regulations, provide that we can issue recommendations in the audit report. And you see in a number of municipalities, we've put those recommendations. And some of the recommendations are really as simple as insisting that there be financial records maintained, that financial statements be presented on time going forward. We've got instances where remedial action has been taken in 25 of those instances. And again, you'll see where there are, where those municipalities are in the different provinces. And you'll see that Nakamudina Mulema has got 4 remedial actions issued in that particular municipality. And then they also have 2 recommendations, and those are all different transactions, all different MIs. They are also the one where we are in the process of dealing with a certificate of debt on 2 other transactions. We've also made recommendations in the audit report and referred matters to public bodies for Ngakamudiri Mulema. So you'll see that they show up much more than any other municipality. There are a total of 16 MIs that we're dealing with in that municipality. Some of them have been in the system for a very long time. And part of it is, part of the length of time these processes have taken is about the idea of the transition following the municipal elections, where there was a change in mayor and there were changes in the accounting officer role. And every time there was that change, we had to start all over again. Fortunately, we don't change, so we have to continue to follow up regardless of who's in the seat. So the process does still continue. It just unfortunately becomes slower when there is that level of instability. We're seeing that some of the delays relate to investigations that take a long time, where also recovery processes take a long time, and where identifying officials that are responsible and actually taking action, disciplinary action, that does take a lot longer than it should. What that tells us is that the different players within the accountability ecosystem are not working as effectively as they should. And in many ways, it starts with the accounting officer, who should be setting a culture and a tone that says, where there's a problem, we will find who's done wrong, we will discipline, and we'll move on. If things take too long, others also understand that they can get away with wrongdoing in the environment. So stability, decisive action, swift action is absolutely crucial. And the disciplinary boards, the councils, the impacts have a role to play in tracking that there is swift action when there have been MIs, because the MIs reach each and every one of those structures. They're well aware of the status of every MI. And we've also encouraged that councils be busy with monitoring the status of MIs on a quarterly basis, supported by the accounting, by the audit committee, but also supported by impact in terms of indicating what the state, confirming what the status of each MI is. That way we start to get a change in the state of discipline in terms of how MIs are being dealt with. So where we've issued recommendations, in the instances where we've had to deal with recommendations, I think that's now on the next slide. Yeah, thank you. We've given the list of where the MIs are involved. Just to give you an example, and the details are in the report that we tabled. In Govanbeke local municipality in Mpumalanga, back in June 2021, we issued an MI relating to their repeat disclaimers. They've been having disclaimed audit opinions for 3 consecutive years at the time. And at the heart of it is that they were not maintaining full and proper financial records that could support what they were including in their financial reports. And when we issued the MI, the accounting officer's written submission was submitted to us, and we assessed it. And our view was that the action that they wanted to take was not going to be adequate or appropriate. So we then included recommendations in the audit report, which are then stronger than the recommendations go into.
There's some disruption.
Am I? Okay. Am I audible still?
No, you are okay. On, though you are somewhat disrupted by there's a phone which was ringing.
Okay.
On that, yeah. But now you're back. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And so what we having issued that recommendation, we indicated in our recommendation that there had to be an action plan, and we insisted that there be proper timelines put to each of those critical actions that would improve record keeping, improve billing and revenue collection, that would improve processes for managing infrastructure and for ensuring that the resources in the hands of that municipality were better managed. What we saw was that there has been slow progress in fully implementing our recommendations. However, we've escalated the matter to not just the accounting officer and the council, but also to the provincial treasury. And they are now working with that municipality to address this issue of poor record keeping. The good news is that since then, the municipality has improved to a qualified audit opinion 2021, 2022, and they've maintained it in 2023, having still got a qualified audit opinion. And what we are doing is continuing to track the implementation of the other recommendations, so that whilst we commend them for improving to qualified, we also know that there's significant work to be done to get that municipality in the right space. And we'll continue to track what they are doing as a municipality, and also what the provincial treasury is doing in terms of supporting the work that they must do. Honourable members, we have been quite active in the space of writing to the provincial leaders in each of these instances, so that our engagement with municipalities on MIs does not only stop there. We have activated the other parts of the accountability ecosystem, specifically the Troika in each of the provinces. When we tabled this report, we made sure that the provincial leadership in each instance was fully briefed on every single one of these MRs. We've also got commitments from the provincial treasury, as well as the COFTA, to support on specific items and to track particular matters. And we'll continue to follow up. And I think I want to highlight that where there's been good responses from the provincial leadership, we do see some action in the right direction, and we would want to encourage it. And it's also consistent with what we've highlighted as the need for an accountability ecosystem that works in a way that's collaborative in the course of improving governance across the state. Just an example of what we've done around taking remedial action. On the next slide, we set out the 25 instances where we've issued remedial action or taken remedial action. And as I indicated, Nagamudiri Mulema is one that's got a significant number of those. But let's just focus for a moment on Dr. Ruth Sokomozi Mombati in the Northwest. Just to give you a flavor of what we mean by taking this remedial action. In the 2020 audit year, the municipality awarded a tender for VAT recovery services. And in the process of assessing that tender, the bid, what we found was that the municipality had incorrectly disqualified a bidder that quoted a lower commission fee percentage than the winning supplier. So they awarded it to a supplier that was going to cost them much more than somebody else. When we saw this, this would have been non-compliance with the legislation, the regulation, and even their own policy. So we highlighted the non-compliance. We then also indicated the financial loss and notified the accounting officer of the MI. And this we did back in December of 2021. The municipality then took action by terminating the contract with the supplier, and this they did in February of 2022. And then what we found, though, is they kind of stopped there. They corrected the wrong award, but then they didn't work on recovering the losses that had been incurred because of this overpayment. And they also did not take the disciplinary action internally to change behavior and to drive accountability and consequence management internally. So no consequence management for the supplier in terms of making sure that the resources are brought back into the coffers of the municipality, and no disciplinary action internally. And because what the law specifies as the obligations of the accounting officer is very clear, we were able to then say, well, the action you've taken is inadequate. Yes, you cancelled the contract, but the action you've taken is still not complete. You've got to make sure that you do the rest of the work that you're required to do as accounting officer. So our conclusion was that the action plan was inadequate. We then notified the accounting officer of recommendations, and we indicated what they had to do. We said, you've got to quantify the financial loss. You must investigate the non-compliance internally and hold that individual accountable through disciplinary action. And we also gave a timeline by which this had to be done. In our assessment, the accounting officer did not make satisfactory progress with implementing the recommendations in our audit report. So now what we've done is we have taken binding remedial action, which echoes exactly what we put in the recommendation, but now they are compelled to do it. What we are seeing is an accounting officer should not be able to get away with ignoring recommendations put by the AGSA. If they're doing so, then it raises question about the level of supervision, monitoring, support, oversight by the mayor, by the council. And it also raises critical questions about the commitment to setting a different tone and a different culture. It also highlights a risk that similar transactions will continue to be entered into, and the leakage of public funds will continue. So whilst we are able to demonstrate to yourself, honourable members, that as AGSA, the work we are doing is having an impact, and where we're not seeing the type of impact that we should see, we continue to implement the powers given to us. I always hasten to add that the only way we're going to get public institutions using resources effectively and efficiently is if we get a different culture. It should not be that an accounting officer gets away with this level of non-responsiveness. And then we come to the notice of certification of debt. Perhaps the major example I must highlight here is Makamujizu Mulema. As I indicated earlier on, we're dealing with 16 MIs where they are concerned. There are 6 referrals that we've issued. There are 4 remedial actions that we've taken, and there are 2 transactions that are the subject of a notification of certificate of debt process. The Public Audit Act amendment, read together with the regulation, provides for the establishment of an advisory committee on MI to advise the AG on the appropriateness of issuing a certificate of debt. They are the ones who are independent of the institution, duly appointed to run a process of engaging with that accounting officer to ensure that there is a fair process, there is a process that's transparent, that allows the accounting officer that's going to be individually affected by a certificate of debt every opportunity to state his or her case. That process is undergoing, and you might ask, why is it taking so long? Partly because we have to follow due process, as the law stipulates. Partly because this is the first one, so we've had to be even more thorough. And also maybe the other reason is that the instability at the level of the accounting officer delayed getting to a point where we could notify of the process of issuing a certificate of debt. We've also found through the process that there has been some back and forth between the advisory committee and the accounting officer in running this process. So there's been some allowance to give time so that the process is indeed fair and thorough. But I don't want to miss the opportunity to highlight that we are dealing with the matter as decisively, but importantly as fairly as possible. Honourable Chair, I think I've now covered the critical areas of recommendations of remedial action and of the notice of the certificate of debt. I just want to give you a sense of the type of matters that we've referred to other public bodies for investigation. There's an old transaction in Machabeng in the Free State where when we first started our MI process, we identified that there had been payments made in a construction project. And when we went to inspect the specific project, which was an attenuation dam, a flood protection dam in the Nyakalong stormwater system, we went to go and assess what the project looks like. And we found that that dam had not been built, even though the paperwork indicated that it had been built and somebody had signed off that it existed. When we looked at it, with the support of our infrastructure experts within our performance audit space, we were able to assess that essentially the municipality had overpaid by paying for something that was simply not there. We issued the MI. Back in May 2020, the accounting officer was not responsive. They didn't provide adequate evidence that they were taking action. We continued to follow up. In June of 2021, we referred the matter to the Hawks for investigation, or that's what the MI process allows us to do if there is inadequate action. And we were delighted that in the middle of last year, it was announced publicly that three individuals had been arrested and that they appeared in court on a case relating to this particular transaction. Whilst the case has been postponed, it does give some comfort to us that there is action being taken to recover losses and to drive consequence management through these actions. We also take note that these things do take time, but we are heartened that the impact of our work is now being seen. Again, there's little more reminder than this of the need for urgent action to be taken to avoid these problems to begin with, because by the time you are now 4 years in chasing this 7.2 million rand of a loss, the likelihood of getting it all back is very, very low. So, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the essence of my input was to give you a sense of where we are finding that the level of responsiveness is not that clear, and I think you can see the trend. We're also giving you a sense of the impact that we can see where there is responsiveness. We continue to interact with the provincial legislature, with the provincial leadership on matters relating to these MIs. Even as recently as this past week, I got confirmation from some of the provincial executives that I had written to ask them to deal with specific matters. I got confirmation that they are attending to them on MIs specifically relating to the ones that are causing harm to the environment, as well as those that are causing harm to public institutions. In terms of the call to action, it would remain really about urging all role players in the ecosystem to support, to monitor, and to oversee the resolution of MIs. There's a role to be played by every single one of those players within a municipality, within the province, but also even in the national sphere. In the national sphere, there are ample opportunities for the committees responsible for overseeing the National Department of COFTA, for the relevant committee in the ACOP, to really track how they are supporting the implementation of corrective action in each of those municipalities. We would also want to urge that councils, MPACs, and the provincial legislators get quarterly reports from accounting officers and track their action on MIs, and that they don't simply wait for the AG's report on these matters at the end of every year. And then where there are delays in dealing with investigations, we would also want to urge portfolio committees in Parliament that are responsible for working with these public bodies, for overseeing these public bodies, to also request regular reports on the status of the relevant investigations so that they can be supportive of improving the efficiency with which these investigations are dealt with. For SCOAC specifically, we thank you for the platform. We thank you for the opportunity to share what we've done. And we want to urge that you continue to showcase the positive impact of how we're implementing these extended powers as a way of really urging the different portfolio committees to also contribute to dealing with the swift resolution of MI. We'd also want to ask you to advocate for portfolio committees to drive accountability processes when it is evident that there are unreasonable delays, especially by accounting officers and the public bodies. That is our input for this morning, Honourable Chair. As I indicated, the detail for each and every one of these MIs is in the report that we tabled. But if there's specific questions, I'm happy to deal with them best as I can. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, AG, for that detailed report, which follows in the heels of what you have given us in December last year. It's a bit of a fascinating picture. Though it is indicative of a progress in as far as accountability instilling process, which is informed by your philosophy, which you have somewhat propelled to instill it to various bodies that you audit, the accountability ecosystem. It's all visible now. That the intention of the key principles of the Act to ensure that the depth of accountability is inculcated one way or the other, and that accounting officers would always be held accountable for their own actions or inactions. And in that instance, your report bears testimony to the fact. It's clear that the progress is very encouraging from the part of the Office of the Auditor General, and because you're talking about matters of culture change, and such instances most of the time would need a sense of urgency. Because when there is loss, which account for bad service delivery, and at times through criminality, where there is a fraudulent activity taking place out there, so your office becomes one of the instruments which seek to make those bodies one, aware, two, take action, not just action, appropriate action, and close the attendance to such activities by realizing the goals and reaching the actual prescripts of the law. So on your side, I think let's appreciate the fact that you continue to give us this a kind of a bit both exciting and fascinating a picture of how our modern of accountability is kicking in into various institutions. I'm sure colleagues would agree that this is a progress towards making local government somewhat work and ensure that a culture change is rekindled in a way towards ensuring that we effectively and efficiently use the resources which have been allocated to these institutions. There it is, colleagues. The comments, questions, if need be, but the briefing has been very useful and extensive. I'm looking into my gadget for hands. There's one hand from Honorable Phillips. Is there any other hand, colleagues, except for Honorable Phillips? There's one other hand from Honorable Matafa. Here I go. Honorable Matuba. What's the running of? Honorable Matuba. It was Honorable Matafa, now it's Honorable Matuba. I take it as such, those three hands, in terms of your own contribution. Honorable Phillips, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Chair. Please forgive me for not turning my video on. My signal is not amazing. I just have some questions, and I'd just like to thank you for the presentation. It is very, very interesting and informative. My question relates to the financial audits that are undertaken by municipalities, and then the results are not presented to council. In a case like that, how is council supposed to conduct oversight and to ensure accountability? That's the one thing. There recently was a forensic financial audit by a company called Gobodo in Rustenburg for the Rustenburg Rapid Transport System, and that hasn't been made public hasn't been made available to council. There are a number of other audits on the water system where CMS was actually involved and the project is halted and the people in Rustenburg are really suffering because they don't have water. Mm-hmm. They've gone some areas for 12 days without water. And there is a forensic audit and the Hawks are involved, but nothing's moving. So how do we conduct oversight over that and start holding accountability if those audits are hidden from us? And the collection of the fees from the municipalities that are supposed to be paying for their audits, how is that progressing? Thank you so much.
Thanks, Honorable Phillips. Honorable Matuba.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to the AG and members of the Portfolio Committee. Chair, I do have two questions. Let me first appreciate the report and also say, Chairperson, we have noted progress in terms of the implementation of the MIs in various government institutions. However, I do have a question to the AG. whether is there any timelines given to accounting officers when they deal with the implementation of this particular function of material irregularities. And if so, what happens if the timeline lapses? If we do have those timelines, what happens thereafter if the timeline has lapsed? What are the processes that are in place in resolving the issue of material irregularities? And to Chair, in her presentation, the AG has highlighted the issue of the billing system. It keeps on coming in, year out, especially in municipalities, where you'll be a good citizen, paying your dues. For this month, you'll be charged for a particular amount of money. When the local government or the institution, the municipality, realizes that this one is one of the people who are able to make an impact and a responsible citizen, then the billing system becomes so abnormal to an extent that one feels that sometimes it's like you are being taxed for other people's actions, non-payment. I just wanted to check, because it comes in, year out, whether have they raised it with the municipalities? I know in different meetings, the communities, end users will continuously complain and maybe advise the local government to find a resolve on this matter. I don't know. I just wanted to check, Chair, because once you are unable to collect your revenue, once everything in your belief system, it's not correct, you'll always keep on doing wrong things. And with the municipalities, one can appreciate that there's one of Mbeki municipality where there is improvement. How many Mbeki municipalities do we have since that time until this time where one can say that we were able to see the progress in terms of the municipalities which are listed with Mbeki? And lastly, Chair, the issue of the provincial department of local government, where you see, when you look at the report, one can also say that there is some improve in various provinces. When I look at the report, I have never picked up any of the municipalities in Limpopo, which has the problem, except the historical challenge of their VBS. But currently, there's sort of an improvement. And when you look at the Northwest, many of their municipalities are the municipalities which does have material irregularities. I just wanted to check whether is there any kind of improvement, whether the local government, especially at the provincial level, where you have a provincial department responsible for local government, are they responsive? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matuba. Honorable Matafa, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson, AG and the team, and members on the platform. No, Chair, mine is very brief after some input made by my members here before me. I'll start by thanking and welcoming the presentation and also commend the fact that the MI process is a process that the AG continuously takes serious, and clearly its implementation is bearing fruits, and we welcome the development. Chair, I only have one question, which also starts from a good note, that the AG reflects on areas where there is no material financial loss, but there is potential harm to society or to the institution. she mentioned repeat findings as an example. I'm more interested in finding out how do we ensure or assist the AG to be able to have this observation and reflection on these particular issues carry almost the same weight as cases where there will be material financial loss. Because as much as she mentions the one example of repeat findings, there might be areas of inaction that they would have been picked up, reported upon, and nothing still does not happen. And that inaction might lead to depriving society the service that they deserve or infrastructure development. So I think it's important that the AG is approaching it that way. It's just that my question is, how do we ensure that that observation also carries the same weight where the accounting officer would see the need to respond just equally as they would with the MI process? It's only that one, Chair, but the presentation is very helpful and we really appreciate the efforts that the AG puts every time they come to the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Matafa. I'm just trying to check whether they're in the other hand. Honourable Mlenzana.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Thanks. Greetings, AG, and colleagues and everybody in the platform. Chairperson, I'm very sorry, man, for this afterthought, because we're listening to you after the AG had to make the presentation. I was somehow satisfied. But now, listening to these questions that are raised by my colleagues, I now have an afterthought, AG, thinking on the effectiveness of the internal audit committees within the local government space. Is there no way where we can do some kind of an assessment and value them in terms of, I mean, value addition where needs be, either through your teams assisting or somehow? It's an afterthought. I'm thinking aloud. Thanks, Chairperson.
Yeah, no, good afterthought. Fine. I think AG, the colleagues have made comments on some questions. I hope that you were noting those. One, which I just want to ask, it's a general a point, that during the COVID time, there existed some form of a model structure, which was in a form of assisting to speed up whatever remedial based approaches are there at that time in the form of the fusion center. Is a structure like that still existing? And this question is based on the fact that recoverability at times would be left to the institution itself, which has experienced that loss or potential loss one way or the other. And I'm looking into the levels of recoveries, which you have somewhat shows and the potential thereof. Like looking into the very effective institutions like the SIU, reporting recoveries, the civil recoveries from various institutions and individuals out there. Whether is there a way that these points and referrals would flow towards that end? I see the structure on the MI process, which helps on the activeness of the accounting officer, after which then you would want to approach any other bodies in assisting the process. Because key here What you have emphasized, which is very critical for us, is the area of efficiency and effectiveness around experienced value in as far as resources allocated to these institutions are concerned. So that might be one angle. And the last point is linked to what Honorable Lenzan has spoken about, which is if even for yourself and any other institution might be key, that they institutionalize response models at the municipal level, so that when you follow through or you assist, there is a trail of action left behind through an anchored body, which is in the institution itself. Therefore, the capacity of the internal audit units looking into the established risk-driven mechanisms, which themselves are supposed to be driving a focused view on some of the elements you discover when you get there to audit the finances. Are there any instances where you would value as such or evaluate it and see how your executives would benefit in working together with these institutions or assisting in enabling them to ensure that they work? You might have a limited role to do so, but in essence, that such institutions might be of assistance as a guarantor to the effectiveness of application of your own duties as per the Public Audit Act. Thank you very much. Over to AG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and the Honorable Members for your inputs and questions. And maybe let me start with the one that Honorable Menzan and yourself, Honorable Chair, are raising in terms of the how we institutionalize responsiveness using other parts of the ecosystem, specifically internal audit and audit committees. I'm inclined to agree with you in terms of having a big opportunity for the AGSA to contribute to strengthening these specific elements of the ecosystem. These are professional colleagues, often trained in ways that are similar to us, but also we've also identified that this is an area where we can invest with relative ease in terms of working with the relevant professional bodies that are home for members of internal audit functions as well as audit committees. So just in summary, I agree with you. I think it's a good opportunity for us to collaborate more effectively with them, to invest in their capability, and to ensure that we drive ongoing alignment with them within institutions, but also across the system. So that's work underway. We've been engaging more and more with the audit committee and with other players to see how we can invest in the capability of audit committees and an ongoing alignment, because every single public institution has got an audit committee. Similarly, they have an internal audit function. And unfortunately, far too many of them tend to focus on financial reports and not so much on performance reports or on compliance. So when the AGSA audit report is dealt with, they worry more about the status of the financial statement and not so much about following up on the aspects that result in findings on performance or even on compliance. And what that does is it actually weakens the impact that they could potentially have. Now, the MI instrument is also another part that they could contribute to in terms of tracking the implementation of the specific action by the accounting officers, advising more directly on to accounting officers on how they could more speedily and effectively implement corrective action, and also even give comfort to the oversight structures that the report that the accounting officer gives on the status of MIs has credibility. So I agree that there's some work we have to keep doing as HSA to invest in those functions. And I want to assure you that there is work underway. We can and we must improve the value that internal audit and audit committee brings into public institutions. And frankly, I'm quite excited about what we can do together with our colleagues in those spaces. And then the questions about how can we improve the accounting officer's responsiveness, Honorable Mataba. I think that the internal audit and audit committees also play a role in driving continued focus on improvements of the control environment. It can't be that they worry only about the audit and getting a favorable audit outcome and being comfortable with an unqualified audit opinion and not worry about what happens within the environment. What's the culture like? Are internal control strengthening? Is consequence management becoming the norm? Are there decisive actions being taken to strengthen how things run? To what extent is the accounting officer instilling discipline? It always interests me that the PFMA and the MFMA have within them a specific obligation for the accounting officer to instill discipline in the environment. And it's always interesting that that's a conversation we don't have enough of. And discipline is not just about having disciplinary action when things go wrong, as important as that is, but it's just about setting a culture where the way that the employees of that department or entity apply themselves with discipline. And that's what's really going to get us to improve the ability of institutions to respond, and not just to MIs, but to improvements that are necessary. And then, Honorable Mataba, the questions you ask about timelines that apply when we issue MIs. So we issue the MI notification. We give the accounting officer 21 working days or 20 working days for them to respond to that MI to tell us how they're going to deal with the matter. We then assess how they're dealing with it. If we believe that their proposed action is adequate and appropriate, we give them the opportunity to act. If we don't believe that their proposed action is adequate and appropriate, we will indicate that to them. And then we might then take a view that the matter must be referred or we issue a recommendation. And that's going to be dependent on the specifics at hand. That recommendation will be clear on the timeline within which they must take particular action. It's only if they don't act on that that we'll come back and check when we check that they've not, and find that they've not done so, then we take binding remedial action. So it's going to depend on the nature of the matter at hand. If we say, get your financial submitted, we can tell them, do it within 30 days, depending on what's happening. If we say, improve records management, you might have to give up to 6 months, which is what we've done in some instances. That's important because it's got to be something that is achievable. So it's going to depend on the nature of the issue. In another instance, we gave a year for them to deal with our recommendation, which dealt with records management, but also dealt with internal controls as well as disciplinary action, because we deemed that that was a fair period within which they could do what was required. So the billings and collections, much of it is about discipline. There's a skills issue. There are IT issues where things are too manual, but much of it in our assessment tends to be a discipline issue. When people have the skills and the technology to go and read meters, and they simply don't, and that continues for months on end, the catch-up becomes really difficult. And the only way you sort that out is by having discipline and ensuring that there is order in how the institution runs and monitoring that the basics are being done on a regular basis and applying consequence management when they don't. So that over time, you have a culture that tends towards disciplined action on what people have been employed to do. And I'm not making light of the skills and the technology deficits, but our experience has been that environments where there is poor discipline lend themselves to these instances of poor billing practices, databases for indigent households that include counselors, for example, those sorts of things. That's a discipline issue. Somebody's got to be seized with making sure that that database is cleaned up, that there's something ends up there that shouldn't be there, taken out, and that there is regular monitoring of those things. The progress we've made, so we've seen significant progress, and I think the report we gave, you might recall, we talked about how a number of municipalities that never used to submit financials for many years were doing so, especially in the Free State. We talked about improvements in disclaimers, especially in the Free State and the Northwest. There are a number of instances where we are seeing improvements being effected as a consequence of these MI processes. We would want to believe that the improvements that are being put in place are not purely going to be forgotten about once the AG says the MI is resolved. Because every year someone must prepare a regular set of financial statements and submit them. We really have to find a way to avoid a repeat set of MIs on things that are so basic. And Honorable Phillips, the matter of the audit fees that are due to us by municipalities remains a big problem. The ATSA continues to struggle to collect its audit fees, especially for municipalities. As things stand, our debtors book is just over R1 billion. And as you know, our revenue line is just over R1 billion. So we've almost got a quarter of our revenue, our annual revenue, sitting in debtors, which is a big constraint on our ability to make the investments we must, on our ability to continue to build the type of capability that will do more in as much as this environment tends to demand more of our institution. So local government, the culture of paying the AG needs to come back. The discipline of paying all their creditors on time and honoring their commitments needs to be dealt with. And yes, while some of them have got severe financial constraints, there tends to be discipline problems. The tendency to pay consultants who put together financials and not prioritize the payment due to the AGSA is still there, which says to us that there's a posture and a culture problem around paying for things that are being provided by the audit office, amongst others. We see far too many municipalities who will fail to honor their obligations to the audit office, but are quick to prioritize other things, which add even less value. And then the matter you raised about audit reports, maybe let me separate the question, because there's two aspects to the question. There was one about forensics reports, which are not done by us, and you mentioned a couple of private professional services firms that did work in specific instances. So accounting officers may procure the service of an investigator to investigate a particular transaction or a particular matter that they're concerned about, and they would then receive that report. They have a terms of reference and receive that report. In the terms of reference and in the terms of engagement between themselves and that service provider, they may well be clear provisions on how that report ought to be dealt with, depending on the matter. So I'm unable to give you a blanket answer on how counsel or even those outside of counsel can get that report, because my answer would be it depends. What I would advise in those instances is to get the accounting officer to account on what it is they were investigating, why they were investigating it, what the outcome of that investigation is, and what the action is relating to that investigation. Because I would imagine that the primary interest you have is on consequence management and on corrective action if things have gone wrong. And that, I think, anyone in the accountability ecosystem has every right to follow up on in terms of how that accounting officer is dealing with consequence management where that's required, and with corrective action where that's required. I believe that that's the conversation to be had. On the AG report, and maybe just to clarify the matter, once an audit is completed and the audit report is finalized, that audit report must be tabled in council by the municipality, by the municipal leadership. And so every councillor will have access to that report within a particular legislative timeframe. When there's a delay in the audit process, either there is a dispute that arises even before the audit report is drafted or after the audit report has been drafted, the AGSA is compelled to engage with the auditee to get to a point where at least there is agreement on the critical issue from a fact point of view. It's still an independent audit report done by the AGSA. However, the process must be one that has given an opportunity for an accounting officer that registers a dispute to be heard. And as you know, Honorable Phillips, we've got a dispute resolution process which has been in place for a number of years. About a year ago, we refreshed it and engaged the honorable members on that. That process is underway, and it has a predictable set of procedures that allow for the auditee to be heard by different people within the AGSA, so that there is a fairness in the problem in the process. The audit process can easily be one where there is a contention on a particular interpretation of a legal matter or an accounting issue, an audit standard. And so sometimes there are disputes, not pervasive, but sometimes there are those disputes. We do have an established process of dealing with those. And where there's a dispute, we will delay the audit process, the conclusion of the audit report, until we have finalized that dispute. We try hard to be as efficient as possible in resolving those disputes so that the audit report will still be tabled. Once we have finished the dispute resolution process and we have finalized the audit report, because you'll appreciate in the dispute resolution process, the audit work has been done. The report is just late because we're trying to resolve a dispute. Within that, once the report is done, the municipal leadership must table it in council. And the law provides that if they fail to do so within a set period, then we will table it. Fortunately, in the municipal space, we don't experience too many instances where we have to table a report ourselves. The leadership of the municipality does table in parliament, in council, when the report is done. But I just want to highlight that's the issue. That report will be tabled by the leadership in most instances. I hope that answers the question that you were posing, Honourable Phillips. Honourable Chair, I think I have dealt with all of the matters that were raised. I'll hand back to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, AG, and thanks, colleagues, for indulging in the actual report and the modeling of the accountability of such institutions, because the audit function is not a casual function. It's based on the legal framework. It's anchored on the prescripts of the law, and such prescripts must be honored at all times, and the success of modeling our institutions within a value system which seek to to respect the fact that they are in use of public funds, and therefore there should be a practice, a culture inculcated for the observation of effectiveness and the thorough efficiencies. So thank you very much, AG, for your effort to be part of that system, which really wants to ensure that the constitutional system of the country is not only observed, it's fully practiced. And to be part of such for us, it should be somewhat well appreciated. From our side as a committee, we would always appreciate the engagement with you and the diverse mode and thoroughness of your work is so appreciated. Thank you very much to yourself and the team. Thanks, colleagues. Have a good weekend. I know that others are at work always, but till we meet in the next meeting. Next week, there's a full sitting of the House, which would observe the debate of the State of the Nation by the President of the country. So thanks, AG, and thanks to your team for such continued work in your contribution in the stability of municipalities. Nkosi kakhulu, ngiyabonga. Bye, Danki.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very spiritual, no?
Recording stopped.